Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome, welcome. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't tolerate sponsors and we don't take calls either. But we do help focus you on the events of the week, I suppose. Sorry, I got a bit distracted here in the studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Yes, the studio is quite warm here in the boiler room at the McBurney compound. And as night settles over the prairies east of Denver, and a light dusting of snow makes its way back upon the Front Range, the bird whisperer is hard at work diagnosing an unwell chicken. A chicken is unwell. And when a chicken is unwell, the bird whisperer will not have that. She's reading the equivalent of a chicken medical text, trying to diagnose what's going on with a chicken named Sugar, who I cannot tell from the other similar chickens, but the bird whisperer can. Yes, indeed. So hopefully she'll get that figured out, because the children had a hard time dealing with the consequences of what could occur if you find an unwell chicken in the flock. That's not to be tolerated, so work continues on that front. And on another front, it is official. The peafowl of the McBurney compound now occupy a home slightly larger than our first house. And we no longer have a garage, because the peafowl have occupied the garage. And, well, we've set it up so that cleanliness is a little easier, although it's still an issue. It's somewhat easier to deal with. So that's what we've got going on. A fine week we wish to all of you as we home in on the news of the day here, the news of the week, as a matter of fact. I go, ironically enough, to Fox Business News first. This is from the Romans versus the Vandals file. Yeah, the Romans versus the Vandals, I said. Yes. Apparently, Bikers for Trump, which Fox Business News identifies as a motorcycle group. Now, back in my day, we would call that a motorcycle gang, but apparently they've become much more tame over the years as the bikers have aged. This is a motorcycle group. They're going to ride into the nation's capital on Inauguration Day, and they will be there alongside protesters who, for some unknown reason, believe Trump is a conservative and threatens their liberal lifestyle. Not sure where they got that idea. Maybe from Fox Business News, perhaps. But the motorcycle gang leader says he doesn't foresee any problems. No. He says, "We are prepared to form a wall of meat." No, it's a he. The one thing you can say about the bikers, they're staunchly heterosexual, from what we understand. They're going to form a wall of meat between the social justice warriors and the snowflake children. No, what are they called? Snowflake students? They seem to have appropriated that term. I thought snowflake children were embryos that were frozen, but now they're calling the weeping millennial students who are in shock over the defeat of Hillary Rodham Clinton. They're calling them snowflakes something or other. Well, they'll all be there. A wall of meat and all. The motorcycle gang leader, he says he doesn't anticipate problems. He says, "We have a strict code of conduct where we don't condone violence. But," and he goes on to say that if the wall of meat is needed, they will act. Yes, I'm sorry, did I say motorcycle gang leader? I meant motorcycle group leader. He says, you certainly won't see bikers out there screaming, calling for the destruction of private property or the death of police officers. Which apparently is now the new standard to being a conservative. You don't openly call for the destruction of private property or the death of police officers. The bikers remind us that they stand against, firmly against, by the way, radical Islam, illegal immigration, and they stand for the American veteran. That's what they consider normal, which I suppose that's normal. That's all well. But as far as the issues that actually challenge the survival of the Republic, marriage, the sanctity of marriage, the killing of innocent children, rampant sexual immorality, and the degradation of the social culture, they don't have an official position on that. Indeed. Or at least they didn't note it here in the Fox Business News article. Let's see. Bruce Jenner will be there. Who's Bruce Jenner?
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah,
Olympian.
Yeah, yeah.
The Wheaties box guy.
Yeah, yeah,
guy. Now he's a tranny.
That's right.
He's going to be there, and oddly enough, he's on the side of Trump and the bikers. And for some reason, the liberals are protesting. I don't understand it. But why did I say this comes from the Romans versus the Vandals file? Well, what you have here is one force, one group of people, a motorcycle group. They're completely devoid of all wisdom and godly morality, who may clash with another force of people, the snowflakes and the social justice warriors, who are hell-bent on overturning everything the first force understands to be reasonable and normal. And I predict there will be no violence between the wall of meat. Can't get over that. A wall of meat. I predict there will be no violence. But if I were Donald Trump, I would have my own security team in place because I wouldn't trust anything the outgoing president has done to protect him. That's all. Call me paranoid. I know they're going to surround the place with dump trucks and concrete blocks, but what are the odds that the inept people working for the Barack Hussein Obama administration are going to leave gaps in the perimeter? Just not even on purpose. I wouldn't even accuse them of doing it on purpose. They're just inept and stupid. We shall see what happens on Inauguration Day, because it's right around the corner. Part one of the ongoing battle between two groups of people who do not know right from wrong. And both of them say they're going to save the country. And, well, just label me skeptical, that's all. Just label me skeptical. All right. Now we'll move. I have the extremely sophisticated computerized audio interface here programmed at some point in the broadcast to bring up the score of the Dallas Cowboys versus Green Bay Packers. It's going to pop up at any moment. But the sophisticated computer interface dates back to 2009. So it has some issues with opening browsers. But we'll see if that pops up, because that was of interest to me. If you've listened to the broadcast, you know my deep-seated hate for the Dallas Cowboys and anything having to do with the Dallas Cowboys. Not to offend anyone, but I also detest, excuse me, not me personally, my extremely attractive audio engineer, detests the Green Bay Packers, anything having to do with the Green Bay Packers. And if she does, this is from WXYZ in Roseville, Michigan. Taylor Trupiano is a citizen of Michigan and a free American. He got a parking ticket on his own property last week. How do you get a parking ticket on your own property, you might ask? Well, he was ticketed for leaving the keys in the ignition with the motor running and no one around. He was puffing his car. He was warming up his car, as we used to call it. Mr. Trupiano was ticketed for acting like a civilized human being on a freezing morning, is what happened. And you're not allowed to do that in America anymore. And now ask yourself, if you can't warm up your car when it's 5 degrees below zero, are you really free? I assert that perhaps you're not as free as you might think you are. Mr. Truppiano could receive a $128 fine, and apparently dozens of cities across Michigan have similar ordinances. We have one here in Colorado, and you've heard me speak out against it. I stand four square against ticketing people for just acting like civilized human beings. But the Roseville police chief, he disagrees with me. He says, we have 5 to 10 cars stolen this way every winter. It's dangerous, and it drives everyone's insurance rates up, and it drives our crime rate up. Really warming up the car? Driving? I think there might be other issues that the chief might want to be paying attention. By the way, just simply making it opportune for a criminal to commit a crime should not be considered to a factor. Posted this. He will not enforce this law against warming up your car like a civilized Michigander, for crying out loud. The police chief says, well, it's just common sense. You don't leave your car running unattended. Well, why not? All right, I think I've said enough on that. If you can't leave your car running, maybe the problem lies somewhere above the police chief's pay grade. It's certainly not the poor guy trying to avoid freezing to death. It's Michigan, for crying out loud. All right. Now, speaking of outrage from the Justice File, which that former story was from the Justice File, as is this one, the FBI reports that they have arrested a Volkswagen employee who was the head of regulatory compliance over a criminal complaint alleging that employees of Volkswagen conspired to defraud customers and impede regulators with test evading software in their cars. You've heard about the scandal. Volkswagen, when they found out they could not comply with clean air regulations forth by hippies and other weirdos and still have a car that could go from 0 to 60 in a reasonable amount of time, they just tweaked the software. I think it's brilliant, frankly. But conspiring to violate the Clean Air Act. That's the complaint, yeah. You'll remember the scandal that erupted a couple, 3 years ago. Yeah, on Volkswagen's diesels. In order to get them to run right, they tweaked the software. Well, Volkswagen has already agreed to pay nearly $15 billion to settle, numerous charges against them in November. In fact, in November of last year, 2016, Volkswagen announced that it would cut 30,000 jobs because of the massive losses associated with this bogus scandal and the bogus Clean Air Act. And now they've arrested a guy. And now there's rumors that the American car companies did the same thing.
What?
Yes, shocking as it may be. When regulators pass rules, business people, that's why some people work for the government, and some people have real jobs where they have to compete in the real world against real competitors. And they're able to do it, and therefore they don't work for the government. Not to offend any government employees, I'm sure that you're fine folks. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about the people you work for. Yes, indeed. All right. Now, so scandal from the Justice File. And shocking that someone would be arrested. That, to me, that's a harbinger of things to come on this ecological religion that various governments have constructed in order to replace true religion upon which all these governments were founded. And they're going to arrest this guy, and they're going to take him to the wall on a criminal complaint. And that's just kind of scary. All right, now from the Culture File, we're going to talk again about the millennials. The Telegraph in London reports that half of young people have significant emotional problems. 48% of youngsters in a recent survey reported that they experienced problems so severe that the problems prevented them from concentrating on their academic work, which is very difficult to do since their academic work is fairly thin if you go and look at what these kids are studying. But even so, their emotional problems make it hard to concentrate. Now, I could just make fun of these kids, but I'm not going to because I actually feel for them. This report is from show that mental health is at its lowest level since the index was first commissioned, whenever it was commissioned, back when some governing official there in England had a dyslexic brother-in-law who he had to find a gig for, and there you go, you've got this commission. Young people say they feel the pressures of getting a job. They say more than a third of them say they did not feel in control of their job prospects. They feel their circumstances are trapping them. Well, who didn't feel like that when you were 22 years old? Many feel so desperate we've got Dame Martina Milburn, chief executive at the Prince's Trust, you see. She says, many of these children feel so desperate it is vital that we support them to develop the confidence and coping skills they need to succeed in life. Yes, indeed. And so there's a commission set up in England to do this, where the ability and confidence and coping skills one needs to succeed in life, those should have been acquired by the age of 6. And if they weren't, well, the blame lies squarely with the parents and the culture in general, for crying out loud. Coping skills needed to deal with life. Let's see. The young folks, they feel that costs are going up faster than their wages. Almost 50% say buy a garage that our peacocks live in. We thought it was outrageous, the price of a house. How are we ever going to make enough money to buy a house? Now, the steady job, though, I never had a concern about a steady job. But I do believe that the Obama economy and the welfare states across the Western world have left young people in an acutely more difficult position than was I when I was in a similar situation. 44% of these kids surveyed claim they don't know what to believe because they read conflicting things in the media. They don't know what to believe, these kids. Well, again, this should have been acquired by age 6. But instead, these poor millennials have been fed a steady diet of godlessness and random sexual immorality that naturally leads them to a state of fear and anxiety. And that's dangerous for the future of civilization. And it's not these kids' fault. It's the fault of their parents. It's the fault of their government. And most of all, it's the fault of the Christian church. View. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Yes, the poor millennials left in a lurch by their upbringing and all of that. It's sad to see. I talked to some younger folks at church today, people in their late 20s, early 30s, and it's a struggle. It's difficult out there. And so I do not make fun of these kids. In fact, I'm here to help. That's one of the reasons the show exists. To help people who are unmoored from reality, to help them acquire the confidence and coping skills. I want to help you acquire the confidence and the coping skills you need to succeed in life. Even if you're over the age of 6, I'm here to help. All right. Now, meanwhile, let's go on to the Queering of America file. It continues. And for that, we go to Berkeley. And this, I couldn't decide whether to put this in the Justice file or the Queering of America file, but I was forced to put it in the Queering of America file due to the editorial staff at berkeleyside.com. Berkeleyside.com is the local Berkeley newspaper in electronic format. Berkeley, California, aired, or it was posted on January 6th, where it was reported that police were looking for a person described as armed and dangerous, who authorities said was responsible for Berkeley's first homicide in 2017. January 6th. Now, Berkeley's not, it's not Chicago, but they couldn't even get through the first week at Berkeley without a murder. The report was that a seriously wounded woman flagged someone down just north of the Berkeley campus, and the police ultimately located a body. Police identified the wanted person in connection with the body as 24-year-old Pablo Gomez Jr. of North Hollywood, California. They are a UC Berkeley student who lives in Berkeley. I said they, yes. Were you confused? Did you think I misspoke? I didn't misspeak. The editors at Berkeley Side have a little side note here. A friend of the suspect contacted Berkeley Side to say that the suspect, Gomez, prefers the pronoun they. And we'll get to why Gomez, well, you already know, right, if you've listened to the show. Anyway, they go on through the article to describe the crime, and they describe Gomez, 5'6", 110 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes. Police, are the police talking about themselves now, or are they talking about Gomez? Their investigation led them to Ashby Avenue, where it was clear, based on the evidence, that a violent crime had occurred. They found a body of an unidentified person. I believe that was the police. Yeah, let's just go with that. A white picket fence surrounded the home of what was believed to be Gomez's home. The front yard was adorned with signs, yard signs, saying "Not our president" and "We stand with Standing Rock." Holiday decorations were present, including a wreath, white paper snowflakes, red and green Christmas stockings, and all of that. Gomez Jr. has been involved with UC Berkeley's Queer Alliance Resource Center, as you can well imagine, and he recently helped organize a protest on campus related to sexual assault. He was also studying Chicanx and Latinx studies, according to their Facebook page. That would be his Facebook page. Just so we don't get confused, that was not the police's Facebook page. That was the last group of people who were referred to the Alliance for Climate Education. And we got another update here that the following day, Gomez, let's see, was in custody. Oh, yes. So this update the following day never uses a pronoun to refer to Gomez. They only use Gomez when it's obvious that they should have used he at least three or four different times. Police say that Gomez is in custody. Gomez was taken into custody after checking himself into a hospital in Burbank. Gomez is now at the Berkeley jail. Community members in Berkeley who know Gomez and the stabbing victim who survived have said that mental health issues likely played a role in sparking the violence. Oh, yeah. Now, whose mental illness? Gomez. Theirs, I guess. Anyway, no pronouns in the update, and I found that quite incongruous. Thank you very much. There at the birth of the free speech movement there in Berkeley, and I believe the free love movement. Yeah, the free love, the biggest lie of the 1960s, that you could have sex with anyone you wanted without any responsibility. And, well, that's how things are going at Berkeley there in the first week of 2017. They already had their first murder, and now they've arrested a transgendered or sexually inner-defined them. Anyway, so that's that. Let's move on, because there is some interesting news that I was not surprised by, but I was a little bit concerned at how all this news came out. You remember the most recent terrorist attack. Well, is it the most recent now? I'm sure it's not. The most recent terrorist attack on American soil was the Fort Lauderdale Airport Massacre. And I remember being somewhat surprised that the name of the shooter came out so quickly. Let's see, his name was allegedly Santiago. And all you heard was that he was a Hispanic and that he was a veteran and that he's mentally deranged. And what you didn't hear, but what has been uncovered and reported at Judicial Watch, is that the Fort Lauderdale Airport shooter is a Muslim convert who took on an Islamic name years before joining the U.S. Army. He took on the name Ashiq Hamad. He downloaded terrorist propaganda and recorded Islamic religious music online. Public records uncovered this past week after the massacre suggest that Hamad is a radical Islamic terrorist and committed to Islam. Illness, who was a veteran. Although there may be some of that in his background, that's not who he was at the time when he went on the shooting rampage of Allah. But within minutes, you saw that he's Puerto Rican. The name, right? And then they put the picture up of him with no mention of the keffiyeh he was wearing. I noticed that, by the way. He was wearing the keffiyeh. And what I didn't know was the index finger. Index finger, apparently one raised index finger, is a signal between Islamists that they are, in fact, Islamics. It indicates that they believe in the one true God, Allah. And Muhammad is his prophet. Yeah. So there you have it. It was another Islamic terrorist attack. Will you hear about this anywhere else except Judicial Watch, my program, and perhaps some of the other talking heads in alleged right-wing radio? No, you won't hear about it, especially if you're a millennial and you're at a rave party right now and it just wouldn't matter to you. All right. So there we have that. Not that we're surprised, but it is disconcerting at the way the news gets reported. In fact, that brings to mind the idea in the mind of these poor millennial children that they don't know what to believe because they read conflicting, They read conflicting things in the media. For example, when I heard that the fellow who shot up the airport in Fort Lauderdale and murdered all those people and wounded all those others, I believed that there was something else going on besides the fact that this guy's name was Santiago. I had a feeling another shoe would drop because I knew what to believe. And I feel sorry for people who don't know what to believe because that's got to be terrifying. To go through life with no foundation, believing that you evolved from some amorphous slime 5 billion years ago, and that you don't know where you're going or what's ever happened. You don't know what's true. You don't know what's real. Many times, leads directly to mental illness. Case in point, Dylan Ruff. Dylan Ruff, the killer at the church there in Charleston, South Carolina, he has been found guilty, should be put to death. Now, will he be put to death? Well, chances are he will not. He's probably figuring he's only got another 40 or 50 years to live now that he's been sentenced to death. You know, Charles Manson's still hanging on in the hospital, by the way. I checked that out just before airtime. You know, Manson's been in prison for 50 years, I think. What, 1970? Coming up on 50 years he's been in prison. But what about Dylan Ruff? Maybe he won't last as long as Manson. Maybe not. Because Ruff, he offended the established leftist order. Now, whereas Manson advanced the established leftist order. Manson was a standard bearer of the modern leftist order. And so maybe too long, by the way, for either McVeigh or Ruff or Charles Manson, for crying out loud. So there, we'll set aside the justice file for now and we'll move seamlessly into the war file as we go over to Germany, where the Jerusalem Post reports that a German court has affirmed that a violent attempt to burn the city's synagogue down by three men back in 2014. Did they rule it was arson? No. They ruled that it was a justified expression of criticism of Israeli policy. That's the burning of a synagogue in Germany. A spokesman for the court outlined the decision in a step in front of a camera and actually answered questions about the fact that they had ruled an attempted arson against the synagogue was actually political speech. In fact, an expression of criticism of Israel's policy. You may not remember this story, but back in July 2014, three German Palestinians sought to torch the Wuppertal synagogue with Molotov cocktails. Well, the court panel said that the three men wanted to, quote, draw attention to the Gaza conflict, unquote. And the court deemed the attack not to be motivated by anti-Semitism. Indeed. A brave new world, indeed. I mean, you could read a story like that, and if you didn't know what to believe, you might think that this is justified, legitimate political speech. A few Molotov cocktails through the window of a synagogue because you're upset about the plight of the Palestinians. What's a young mind bereft of godly wisdom and a foundation in the creation of the universe by the living God? What is a young mind like that to believe? Well, let me just remind all of you of what Israel and what you should believe, because the original synagogue at Wuppertal was burned down by Germans during the Kristallnacht pogroms in 1938. And from that insanity, let's go to something even less sane, if that's possible. This article, the story I'm about to read to you, proves that God is not watching everything all the time, because Planned Parenthood opened a new home, came together last week to bless it. Yes, they blessed the nation's capital's newest health clinic, according to the DCist, which is a liberal outlet there. I've got a quote here from Dr. Laura Myers, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Metropolitan Washington. She says, quote, "In almost every message to our staff, I talk about doing our sacred work. This confirms the sacredness of the work we do." Now the clinic, this abortion clinic in Washington, D.C., is called the NOMA Health Facility, spelled N-O-M-A. I'm not making that up. NOMA. Talk about dark irony. This NOMA facility hosted a prayer circle led by Rabbi Michael Namath. And, of course, he was joined by the Reverend Doctors Christine and Dennis Wiley of the Baptist United Church of Christ. They went on about how blessed and sacred and how wonderful it was. The rabbi spoke. Listen to this. The rabbi spoke of his belief in the Jewish tradition of making healthful decisions about one's body in a way to honor God. He said that at an abortion clinic, where mothers and fathers bring their unborn children in to be butchered and dismembered. It's just it's a healthful decision. Yeah. Let's see this. The rabbi goes on, "God, let your spirit rest upon these caregivers who serve as instruments of your hands." Instruments of God's hands, said the rabbi. The medical director there at Planned Parenthood said, "Now I can tell all the patients that this is a blessed place. It's been blessed." And the abortion clinic was America's first openly gay imam. Uh-huh. And he was joined. He joined the ceremony over Skype from Thailand. And we're not allowed to ask what he was doing in Thailand. There was also a Hindu priest there chanting a mantra. The Hindu then flicked holy water. Do the Hindus have holy water? Apparently they did. It's an interfaith service. So they found a Catholic who would hand over his holy water to the Hindu, and he could sprinkle it on everybody while the group sang, "Hold on to your hat, this little light of mine." But no doubt, Planned Parenthood did not have a problem finding 20 faith leaders to come and bless a place where the next generation of children will be sacrificed on an altar of convenience to a false god. And the punishment that these faith leaders will endure in eternity is not to be compared to any suffering you could even possibly imagine. That is how severe it will be. And so we move appropriately from that insanity to the personhood file, where Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin signed a pair of allegedly pro-life bills into law, including one bill codifying over 98% of all surgical abortions into Kentucky law. Yes, it's a pro-life law that says 98%+ of all abortions are acceptable. Now, the Washington Times didn't report it that way. I inserted the line about codifying 98% of all surgical abortions. The Washington Times reported it in the Orwellian fashion by using the term banning abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Do you people understand that that's halfway through a pregnancy, for crying out loud? Pro-life groups say the number of states with bans on abortion at the point of pain capability, the 20-week mark, signals the need for federal legislation. Yes, now so all of the pro-life industry groups, like Planned Parenthood, although they're all in alliance, I suppose, life industry movement, they're calling for federal legislation, which you can read that as a big fundraising opportunity. Yes, indeed. Fundraising letters already going out. Momentum is building, said the president of the Susan B. Anthony List, who at that time was editing and approving fundraising letters and campaigns to begin around all of this momentum around the idea that we can write laws that further codify. Susan B. Anthony List, they'll do quite well raising funds around that issue because people are generally pretty stupid and devoid of godly wisdom and a foundation from which to fight for the rights of innocent people. Now, the American Civil Liberties Union immediately challenged the constitutionality of one of the other bills that Governor Matt Bevin signed. Listen to this. Matt Bevin signed a law that says the mother has to watch an ultrasound of the child before she kills it. But if she watches it, she can kill the baby. That's how far the pro-life movement has fallen. Well, the American Civil Liberties Union immediately challenged the constitutionality of that. They are the other side of the pro-life industry, and they'll be sending out fundraising letters along with the National Right to Life Committee and Planned Parenthood all around all of this, and they'll continue feathering their nests while not one innocent person's life will be saved. And worse than that, the idea that you can be against killing just a few people and you can actually write into law the legality of killing most of the innocent people being killed, and then you can call yourself pro-life. That is the more insidious and corrosive idea that is being planted into the minds of the relatively stupid masses. Is that if you're against one or two abortions out of 100, then you're pro-life. Very corrosive. By the way, the Washington Times reports that more than half of states in the United States of America require the mother to watch her child on an ultrasound before she murders the child. Well, they didn't quite say it that way, but that's what it is. They said before she obtains an abortion. Watch here. Let's show you a video of the child. And if you watch the video and sign this document that you watch the video, then you can murder this child. It's horrible, horrifying to think of what is happening and what has happened. But there we are. And so the lack of respect for life in general continues unabated. And there's no There's no guarantee that we're ever going to come back from this. Save the return of Jesus Christ, who will put everything in order. Trust me. Jesus Christ will explain to everyone exactly what it means to be pro-life and to be against the murder of innocent people. He will explain it with extreme prejudice. And all of you who thought that you could just toe the line with your neighbors and send money to people who promote the killing of 98% of the children who are being killed, well, you'll suffer, that's all. You'll suffer in eternity, and I feel sorry for you. You should repent now. This is from the I don't know what to call it file. I just don't even know where to begin with this. But I'm going to convey this to you in the hopes that it enlightens us in some way. It's from the United Kingdom, from the Sun. Jack and his transgender lover are accused, Kaylee, are accused of binding Bethany Hill's wrists with duct tape and then slashing her throat, murdering her for a sadistic thrill in the bathroom of their apartment. The young girl, Bethany Hill, had repeated cuts inflicted to the back of her neck before she bled to death when her jugular vein was cut. Just another horrific, shocking murder that is more horrific and more shocking than the last one I told you about last week, and it just gets worse. Bethany had been living with Jack, her ex-partner, and she was living with his transgendered girlfriend. Did I mention that the one of them was a tranny? No, I didn't mention that because it's, well, there it is. So, you know, the human being was not designed to engage in random acts of sex and then disconnect and re-engage with other people over and over and over. We were just not designed that way. And because the younger generation, going back, I don't know, 75 years, before I was even born, has been taught that the ultimate goal in life, or one of the ultimate goals, is to engage in multiple acts of sex with as many people as you possibly can, and then maybe settle down and find the right one, have some kids. So a generation or two are disconnected from reality, the reality that we're not designed to do that. And some of them go so far as to become trannies, and others go so far as to murder their ex-girlfriend. And that's what's happened here. Bethany was living with this guy and his tranny girlfriend. And she got herself killed. Because she should have left. Well, she should have never been there in the first place. Now, back to the story. The tranny, who was born a boy named Kyle, had met Bethany at college and they became best friends. Well, I don't even want to get into what happened between them, despite the fact that he was a tranny. Jurors were told that the trio had a confused relationship. Let's just leave it at that. The court heard that Bethany was planning to get pregnant with a baby fathered by the tranny. But that didn't work out, and instead it ended in murder. Bethany got the death penalty for her error in judgment. And we can only hope that the creep and the tranny also get the death penalty in this case, although it's highly unlikely since there is... All right. Just horrible. In the meantime, what else? Well, let's give a little bit of encouragement. The left is freaked out about the personhood movement again, thank heaven. Care2.com had an article up last week. Care2, by the way, is an artificial charity, in my humble opinion, that's all about promoting abortion, homosexuality, and sexual immorality. But they dress themselves up as an organization dedicated to doing good. Care2.com. You can join and do good. The author from Care 2 writes that the personhood movement is up to new attempts, and they're downright terrifying, beyond just the impact on abortion and birth control. Yes, in Alabama, the state Supreme Court has ruled that the point of fertilization is the point in which a human exists and deserves all the legal rights due to other people, and has enabled courts to prosecute women for endangering fetuses by the use of illicit drugs and other things while pregnant. In a recent state Supreme Court ruling, the judges in Alabama have stated that the state's wrongful death statute can be applied to a doctor whose patient doesn't carry to term, even if the miscarriage is very early in the pregnancy. She goes on to describe various alleged stories of how this is so horrible for women who've lost their babies and how it could scare doctors away from ever protecting women again. Yes, that's, of course, the old saw, the old tried and true saw. Listen to what this author at Care 2 says. She's scared that this new move toward personhood, specifically in Alabama, but in other places, the scary personhood movement is going to make medical professionals less likely to be willing to work with pregnant women, and this could endanger their lives. It will become difficult for a medical practitioner to offer care without first worrying about the impact it could have on a developing pregnancy. So she's terrified that a doctor might be forced to consider that there are two people, two lives involved. But the author misleads you if you don't know what to believe. Because instead of saying without first worrying about the impact medical treatment could have on a developing pregnancy, the author could have and should have said, without also worrying about the impact medical treatment could have on a developing pregnancy, which is simple common sense if you're a doctor, the Hippocratic Oath, all of that. But this author says, no, no, everything could be blamed on a doctor. Of the loss of a viable pregnancy could be blamed on a doctor. You know, just the way all of those doctors were persecuted and prosecuted before abortion was legalized. You remember when all that happened? No, you don't remember it? Well, maybe you don't know what to believe. Because if you do know what to believe, and you know what's real, you know that that never happened, and that none of the concerns of this Care 2 author will ever happen either. And so forgive me if I wasn't perfectly clear about all that. But for those of you who don't understand history beyond the date you were born, the fact is that doctors and medical professionals were never prosecuted for the loss of a pregnancy in which they were not negligent. And now doctors are flat out homicidal, encouraged to kill the babies, is where we are now. And not only is our doctors being driven to homicide, very few doctors, by the way, who actually deal in that dirty, filthy business. Most doctors are dedicated to healing and curing people and making sick people feel better. Most medical providers, that's their goal in life, is to heal and to cure, and especially children and babies. But there's a dark, dirty side of the business. And there's a few underhanded, dirty, low-life doctors, so-called doctors, who make their living murdering innocent people. And so if you don't know what to believe, you might not understand what's happening. And that's why I'm here. I'm here to help you know what's real and what is true, and to help you know what is outrageous, ridiculous, and unbelievable on its face. Like this following story. Environmentalists in the United Kingdom, well, they're quite upset. A charity there, an environmentalist charity, there in the United Kingdom, is warning that population growth in the United Kingdom will cost the economy billions over the coming years. Billions, I tell you. But instead of cutting immigration, this environmentalist charity, Population Matters, urges native Englishmen not to have any kids, have fewer children. They say population is the problem. And the idea is to, well, encourage. I don't even know if you have to encourage the British not to have children anymore. The population in the UK, though, according to the article from Breitbart, is projected to surge by 10%, or 5 million people or so. Is that a surge, 10%? That doesn't seem all that big. And why is the population in England expected to surge by 10%? I mean, whoever got that idea? All I read about is declining birth rates across Europe, England included. And so I don't know where they got the idea that there's going to be a population surge. But, of course, Breitbart publishes the story on the cutting immigration angle. That's what Breitbart's all about, cutting immigration, which is fine. It's okay to be about cutting immigration, especially of Muslims. I'm all for that. But the crux of the story has nothing to do with immigration. It has to do with ginning up this lie that a large population could possibly harm the economy. How could that possibly harm the economy? Oh, I forgot. England, along with the rest of Europe, is a welfare state. And so, but does Breitbart focus on dismantling the welfare state? No. No, they talk about cutting immigration because that gins up emotions and gets a lot of click-throughs. They say the Population Matters, by the way, back to the story, says that this... this explosive population surge is going to put strains on roads and infrastructure. Really? Well, if you had 5 million more people to help maintain the roads, don't you think we could figure out how to maintain the roads? No, we should be scared. We should be all be terrified. This group, Population Matters, is lobbying the government there in the UK for more public money for family planning, contraception, and abortion. By the way, that's what they mean by family planning, is how to plan to not have a family. Family planning is all about contraception and abortion. That's the focus. And we have a quote here from Chris Packham. He's the patron of Population Matters, and he wrote in the London Times the following. He says, in the UK, we already have the choice of how many children we have. If we want them to enjoy the natural world, to have a thriving, supportive natural world they will need to survive, we have to recognize that the more of them we have, the more difficult it will be for them to do that. We all need breathing room, animals, plants, human beings. We shouldn't have to compete for it. And we don't have to. No, certainly we can choke off the next generation. Bring me some pills. Strike up the obituary. We can save England from itself. Everybody's terrified of their own children. Now that's mentally deranged. When these innocent little babies who couldn't hurt a fly terrify these leftists over at Population, they're terrified over at Population Matters over babies. And when you're scared of babies, you are mentally deranged. That's all. And I'll leave the UK aside to wallow in the mire they have created after several generations of utter godlessness, socialism, and, well, I'll just stop right there. Anyway, let's go to the science file for something that is... Well, on the one hand, it's interesting, and on the other hand, it's terrifying. The Pentagon, according to physics.org, is testing a 21st century version of locusts. Yes, of over 100 micro drones. A swarm, I said. Yes, they say it's an important step in the development of new autonomous weapons systems made possible by improvements in artificial intelligence. So now they have a... Military strategists say they have high hopes that drone swarms, these are drones the size of little bees, would be cheap to produce and able to overwhelm the opponent's defensive their opponent's defenses with their great numbers. And they carried out a test of the world's largest micro drone swarm in California back in October. And they launched them from F-18 fighters. They launched these micro drones. And the drones demonstrated advanced swarm behaviors such as collective decision-making, adaptive formation flying, and self-healing. Okay, I'm not sure if I'd buy that. That might be a little bit of hype from the sales rep trying to sell the micro drones to the Pentagon, but we'll let that slide. Salesmen are allowed to embellish to a certain degree. Collective organism, they say. The drones are called Perdix, P-E-R-D-I-X. They claim they are not pre-programmed. That's what they claim. They say they are a collective organism sharing one distributed brain for decision-making and adapting to each other like swarms in nature. Uh-huh. That's according to the director of the Pentagon Strategic Capabilities Office. And Defense Secretary Ash Carter, a technophile. Sorry about that, Ash Carter. And former Harvard professor. Yeah, I saw he was a Harvard professor, and I had a little slip there. He created this these drones, these Perdix drones, were originally created by engineering students at MIT back in 2013. And physics.org says, Perdix drones draw, quote, inspiration from the commercial smartphone industry. And I read that, and I'm like, what? Smartphone? What about insects? It sounds like they're drawing inspiration from insects more so than smartphones. But to credit that these scientists are actually trying to copy insects might imply that they're trying to copy the creation of the living God, and nobody wants to give him any credit, even when they're copying and stealing all his best stuff. So there you have that. All right. Now, finally, I'm going to close with this. That's all, because we're almost out of time, and if we're not almost out of time, we should be, I think. But we have an elderly couple from Southern California. They got into some financial difficulties. Have you ever seen this happen? Older couple make some bad investment decisions. They find out that their nest egg isn't what they had hoped. In fact, maybe bankruptcy is looming. Well, here we've got an elderly couple who was in financial trouble. So they decided to go to the Silverton Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is a sign of financial trouble. You go to the Silverton. That's an indication that there is financial troubles. Now, in the past, I've known some older folks to which this has happened. Maybe you have. Older folks who didn't save for their retirement, or they lost everything in their investment. What are the options? Well, let's sell assets. Let's go to the kids and see if maybe they can help us. Well, at least we've got Social Security. We'll at least survive. Well, we've got each other, right? We've got each other. But no, that's not the... None of those options appealed to this elderly couple. Instead, they parked on the fifth floor of the parking garage at the Silverton Hotel and Casino. Exited their vehicle, climbed onto the wall, and jumped to the ground to their deaths. They killed themselves because they had financial problems in their old age. Because suicide is now just one of many options that one may choose from to solve life's many problems. Just a note from the Silverton, part of the casino's parking lot was closed for a short time after the incident. And that's just sad. But that's the state of Western civilization, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you what it is, how I see it, what's real, because I want to help you know what to believe. And as I said, that's why we're here. Not only me, but my friends at KGOV.com and American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.